Step up to the podium there. You'll have 15 minutes to present your argument. There is no one on the other side of this case, so we're only going to hear your side of the argument today. That little timer in front of you will tell you how much time you have left.
Okay, thank you.
And you can start when you're ready.
Okay. I'll start with assignment of error number one. Trial court errors matter of law in its determination as to whether annuity is income for the purposes of child support. My argument is relatively simplistic.
And by the way, let me just interrupt you. We have read your brief, so you know you don't.
I don't have to argue.
You don't have to read. You know, we've already read all that. So anything you want to add to that is fine.
Certainly. I would just say that in the case of the annuity, which kind of mirrors items number two and three, statutory construction and interpretation says that if the statute is clear and unambiguous and the meaning can be derived and the legislative intent can be derived, then judicial review is over. If that is truly the case, then 21-108 specifically says annuity is to be included for purposes of child support. It has an area of inclusion as well as an area of exclusion. And the inclusion section includes annuity. In the exclusion section, it doesn't exclude it. More guidance than normal. I believe that, simplistically speaking, my layman's understanding of law, that's pretty clear and definitive, is that it is included. Legislative intent included it. Judicial review is first look if the statute's clear. And there's, Cromwell, Logan versus Fairfax. The list goes on as far as cases to pull from that have the interpretation of statutes. And I would rest on the annuity aspect pretty much with that basic argument. The arguments that have been raised in opposition to my argument have varied. The one in this particular case is the Whitaker versus Colbert case was utilized, and the annuity was framed as a capital recoupment instrument. I believe that Whitaker versus Colbert is a weak case that doesn't control or give guidance to the matter. I believe that the first look is definitive in case case law looking at the case would be the second look. So I don't believe that that's even necessary. My brief addresses capital recoupment and the Whitaker versus Colbert case very thoroughly, and it shows how this annuity has no basis for capital recoupment. So I'll leave that to the brief. The other argument that's been raised in opposition to it is that it originated as a personal injury settlement, therefore personal injury not being listed in child support statute, therefore it must be outside of the collection of child support. I do not believe that's the case. I believe child support is very definitive. I believe that the statute clearly encompasses annuity, as well as gifts, awards, prizes.
You're referring to the Pell Grant issue there, I assume.
Correct. That was added some time ago when I still had an attorney. I personally, I see that small issue as being a modification issue later, that whatever was derived now and awarded by the court, that opens up a modification issue. And I've been at this for 4 years. I would like to be finished with it if I can. To me, that's pretty much the argument for 1-3. There's certain rules to this system, and it seems as if that adheres to the rules. My request for the annuity to be included as child support. So on those specific issues, I'd ask that the court remand them back for a new hearing, new judge, and as a directive that the annuity and any gifts be included with a directive to include for child support in this matter. The trial court erred as a matter of law in refusing to grant a credit to the plaintiff for child care. The court denied me child care, and even during the summer months, and I'm a single father of four children, sole custody, for the purposes of child support. That action had a debilitating effect on my life and what small finances I was able to get going since the separation. I would have understood with the power of deviations if the court would have included the child care and then deviated away. I could see that occurring. But to totally, with the language being mandatory, that I'm entitled to child care so I can have some form of life, because I've had 4 years no absence from my children. That is specifically there for the reason to allow me to have some existence. I was denied that. I submitted a signed agreement with the nanny I had at the particular time, and the most recent paychecks I had from given to her. I was only able to locate one case that the Court of Appeals agreed with the circuit court as far as not giving the custodial parents child care, and that was because the particular individual had not proven the cost or proven the need. I believe I met that benchmark in my hearing and in the transcript, and I would ask that that be returned to circuit court as well. It was a mistake, I believe, because the language is mandatory and controlling. This is the judge found that I did work, so he kind of, there's some mitigation there of the facts, if I'm saying that correctly. And so I would ask that the case be remanded back for a new hearing so I can have child care. The trial court abused its discretion in declining to award the plaintiff tuition for private school for the children. Three of my children attend Salem Christian School in Goochland County, and they have basically since adolescence. In my study of this, there is certainly child support statute provides for educational expenses of the children. There's a few cases quoted in my brief, Eisen versus Eisen, where the agreement to keep the children in private school was actually incorporated into the custody agreement. And so therefore the court found that that was more rationalization for awarding the custodial parent child care. The same thing happened in this case. The custody agreement actually incorporates in keeping the children in Salem Christian. I have done that at my own expense, $50,000 plus for the last 3.5 years. I can't continue to do it. The children's lifestyle has already had a dramatic change. I don't want to subject them to any additional drastic changes. So I intend to keep them at very least in the environment that they're happy with and that they do well as their straight A, AB, honor roll. My oldest has a 3.7 GPA. They have won integrity awards, geography spelling bee. They're really doing good. At all personal costs of myself, I will keep them at that school to the very best. I'm simply asking that under the child support guidelines that there is an allowance for educational expenses for the children. I'm asking that the court remand that issue back to the trial court in order that I may have some assistance in keeping the children's well-being intact. In researching the particular, and forgive my crumbly voice and all that, I'm not accustomed to doing this and I'm trying to get through it. The availability of a my understanding was demonstrated needs in order for the court to rule that educational expenses for private school can be encompassed in the child support. My understanding is there's certain benchmarks, and those benchmarks are availability of public schools. Yes, we do live in a county, so there are public schools. The stipulation of the incorporation into the custody agreement, that's important as well to these things. Nowhere, she's also in favor of it. Nowhere does the mother oppose that school, and she's praised it as a good school and good for the well-being of the children. It's an important aspect. Children have attended the same school for the better part of 12 years. They have many lifelong friends and faculty, are awesome role models. It's a Christian school based on moral upbringing, which generally equates to productive citizenry. a goal that is hopefully shared by the father in this court. I've already made testimony towards their what they've done and how well they're exceeding in their task. And I believe the statute supports it. I believe the case law and various other aspects also support the mother paying some.
Did you at some point want to homeschool the children?
We did for 2 years. When the mother left, I was actually homeschooling my oldest daughter.
Okay, and didn't children at some point attend public school?
Two of my youngest children attended for 2 years. They have voiced opposition to it. And what I would say is, in my experience, my oldest son, who's now aged out and who is out of high school, graduated. He graduated with a 2.4. When he attended Salem up into the eighth grade, he had a 3.6. Switching to public school environment in the ninth grade for sports programs and extracurricular activities opened up a host of problems. His GPA dropped to 2.2 the first year. He graduated with a 2.4. Got to play some sports, but with a host of social issues, the public atmosphere and environment, you know, it's teenage sex, drugs, a variety of things. And this is a normality to most people, but I've worked hard my whole life to keep my children in private school, to be able to provide them an environment that protects them from the herd, per se. And some people view that as a mistake, that children need to be part of the herd. I disagree. The herd's kind of a little mad to me right now, so I try to fill in their sociability with lots of activities, and so they have that good outgoing environment, but at the same time they have a good moral understanding of who they are and a good foundation to head out into this life. That's about all I had to say for the private school issue. I believe that we do meet the requirements. I believe it's supported by statute and case law, and I would ask that issue be remanded back with the directive to allow me to have some assistance to pay for my private school. My children's private school, arrearage, supported by statute, supported by case law. The mother received $100,000 not long ago and chose to use the power of that money to fight paying for child support. I have been at it since 2011, that is the filing date of April. I have carried the bills, I have done everything that I can to provide for my children and to maintain their standard of living as it was before the separation. I was able to do that because I owned my own home, a home that the mother had only lived at for maybe 8 or 9 years. We were not married. It's not the traditional thing, because the reason I say that is I feel as if some courts kind of want to justify there not being a support order or a spousal support and property clarification. I get the feeling from some court that they're kind of trying to straighten it out. But the case is, I sold my house after she left, and it took me a year to do so. It was very tough times during that period until I sold my house. I sold my home and I've been living off that money since. I paid cash for my house. I've worked hard for my money all my life. I've been working in construction since I was 14. That was to be their college money. I've now spent that. I'm on Medicaid. By the end of the summer, if I don't get some assistance, I will be applying for food stamps for the first time in my life. I'm trapped. I have no child care. I have nothing. It's from my layman's perspective of reading the law and seeing what transpired in circuit court, it's a very strange occurrence to me. I don't understand, especially minus a written explanation why, which is mandatory by child support guidelines, that if you deviate from the child support, you're supposed to do a written reason why. Running out of time, I believe the arrearage is owed to me. I believe that it's owed to the children in this matter. These are resources they're going to rely on for future schooling. I ask that this case be remanded back with a clear directive to actually tally and award arrearage in this matter, as I've carried the bills for all this time. In closing, I have 1 minute, and I'll say that, in reviewing the 45 CFR 360.56, which is where the child support comes from. You know, the clear mandate on deviation, and I could be wrong about this, but the clear mandate on deviation is that it has to be reflective of the child's best interest. To not give the father any child care or any meaningful child support and then deviate when the mother has a $1 million annuity, $60,000 in the bank, is working, has money, lives for free, has no debt, to deviate and not give the father or the children any award in this matter seems very strange to me, and I don't understand it. And in looking at the deviating understanding in a layman's perspective from the feds, the federal guidelines, it says that you must have the well-being of the child as a standard for deviating. And Virginia does the exact same thing. Well, if you deviate and don't help the well-being of the children, is deviation allowed? That's my time. I thank you for hearing my appeal. I thank you for hearing my rambly.
You did fine.
Yeah, you did good.
Did good.
Mr. Olley will